Book 2. Zweitracht. It must have a natural cause. It must have a supernatural cause. Let these two asses be set to grind corn. Frate Perdurabo, OTO, Chinese Music, The Book of Lies. The fourth trip, or Kesed. Jesus Christ on a bicycle. Mr. Order, he runs at a very good pace. But old Mother Chaos is winning the race. Lord Omer Khayyam Ravenhurst KSC. The Book of Advice. The Honest Book of Truth. Among those who knew that the true faith of Muhammad was contained in the Ishmaelian teachings, most were sent out into the world to seek positions in the governments of the Near East and Europe. Since it pleased Allah to decree this task for them, they obeyed willingly. Many served thus for their whole lives. Some, however, after 5 or 10 or even 20 years of such fealty to a given Shah or Caliph or King, would receive, through surreptitious channels, a parchment bearing a symbol. That night the servant would strike and disappear like smoke, and the master would be found in the morning throat cut, with the emblematic flame dagger of the Ishmaelians lying beside him. Others were chosen to serve in a different manner, maintaining the palace of Hassani Saba himself at Alamut. These were especially fortunate, for it was their privilege to visit more often than the others the Garden of Delights, in which the Lord Hassan himself would, through his command of magic chemicals, transfer them into heaven while they still lived in the body. One day, in the year 470, known to the uncircumcised Christian dogs as 1092 AD, another proof of the Lord Hassan's powers was given to them. For they were all summoned to the throne room, and there sat the Lord Hassan in all his glory, while before him on the floor lay a plate bearing the head of the disciple Ibn Azif.
"This deluded one,"
the Lord Hassan declared,
"has disobeyed the command. The one crime that cannot be forgiven in our sacred order. I show you his head to remind you of the fate of traitors in this world. More, I will instruct you on the fate of such dogs in the next world."
So saying, the good and wise Lord Hassan rose from his throne, walking with his characteristic lurching gait, and approached the head.
"I command thee,"
he said.
"Speak."
The mouth opened and the head emitted a scream, such that all the faithful covered their ears and turned their eyes away, many of them muttering prayers.
"Speak, dog,"
the wise Lord Hassan repeated.
"Your wine is of no interest to us. Speak."
"The flames,"
the head cried.
"The terrible flames! Allah! The flames!"
It babbled on as a soul will in extreme agony.
"Forgiveness!"
it begged.
"Forgiveness, O mighty Lord!"
"There is no forgiveness for traitors,"
said the all-wise Hassan.
"Return to hell."
And the head immediately silenced. All bowed down and prayed to Hassan and Allah alike. Of the many miracles they had seen, this was certainly the greatest and most terrible. The Lord Hassan then dismissed everyone, saying,
"Forget not this lesson. Let it stay in your hearts longer than the names of your fathers." "We want to recruit you,"
Hagbard said 900-odd years later.
"Because you're so gullible. That is, gullible in the right way."
Jesus Christ went by on a bicycle. That was my first warning that I shouldn't have taken acid before coming down to Balboa, Michigan, to see the action. But it really seemed right on another level. Acid was the only way to relate to that whole Kafka on a bummer example of, quote, democratic process in action, unquote. I found Hagbard in Grant Park, cool as usual, with a bucket of water and a pile of handkerchiefs for the tear gas victims. He was near the General Logan statue, watching the more violent confrontations across the street at the Hilton, sucking one of his Italian cigars and looking like Ahab, finally finding the whale. Hagbard, in fact, was remembering Professor Tokas at Harvard.
Damn it, Chileen. You can't major in naval engineering and law both. You're not Leonardo da Vinci, after all. Oh, but I am,
he had replied, poker-faced.
I recall all my past incarnations in detail, and Leonardo was one of them.
Tokas almost exploded.
Be a wise-ass. When you start flunking half your subjects, perhaps you'll come back to reality.
The old man had been terribly disappointed to see the long row of A's. Across the street, the demonstrators advanced toward the Hilton, and the police charged again, clubbing them back. Hagbard wondered if Tokas had ever realized that a professor is a policeman of the intellect. Then he saw the Padre's new disciple, Moon, approaching.
You haven't been clubbed yet,
I said, thinking that in a sense Jerry's old pre-surrealist classic, The Crucifixion of Christ Considered as an Uphill Bike Race, was really the best metaphor for the circus Daly was running.
Neither of you, I'm glad to see,
Hagbard replied.
Judging from your eyes, though, you got tear-gassed in Lincoln Park last night.
I nodded, remembering that I had been thinking of him and his weird Discordian yoga when it happened. Malik, the dumb social democratic liberal that John wanted to recruit soon, was only a few feet away. And Burroughs and Ginsburg were near me on the other side. I could see suddenly that we were all chessmen. But who was the chess master moving us? And how big was the board? Across the street, a rhinoceros moved ponderously, turning into a jeep with a barbed wire crowd sticker on the front of it.
My head's leaking,
I said.
Do you have any idea who's picking it up?
Hagbard asked. He was remembering a house lease in Professor Orlok's class.
What it amounts to in English,
Hagbard had said,
is that the tenant has no rights that can be successfully defended in court, and the landlord has no duties on which he cannot, quite safely, default.
Orlok looked pained, and several students were shocked, as if Hagbard had suddenly jumped up and exposed his penis in front of the class.
That's putting it too baldly,
Orlok said finally.
It might be somebody years in the future,
I said.
Or the past.
I wondered if Jerry was picking it up in Paris half a century before. That would account for the resemblance. Abby Hoffman went by just then, talking to Apollonius of Tyana. Were we all in Jerry's mind? Or Joyce's? We even have a Sheriff Wood riding herd on us, and Rubin's horde of Jerry men.
Fuller's car is a stunt, a showpiece,
Professor Caligari fumed.
And anyway, it has nothing to do with naval architecture.
Hagbard looked at him levelly and said,
it has everything to do with naval architecture.
As in law school, the other students were disturbed. Hagbard began to understand. They're not here to learn. They are here to acquire a piece of paper that will make them eligible for certain jobs.
There are only a few more memos,
Sol said to Muldoon.
Let's skim them and call headquarters to see if Danny found this Pat who wrote them.
Illuminati Project, Memo 15, 8/6, JM.
Here's the weirdest version of the Illuminati in history I've found so far. It's from a publication written, edited and published by somebody named Philip Campbell Argyle Stewart, who holds that the conflicts in the world are due to an age-old war between Semitic Khazar peoples and Nordic Faustian peoples. This is the essence of his thinking. My theory is that an extremely devilish imposed overcrust was added to the Khazar population consisting of humanoids who arrived by flying saucer from the planet Vulcan. which I assume to be not in intra-mercurial orbit around the sun, but rather in the Earth's orbit behind the sun, forever out of sight to Earthlings, always 6 months behind or ahead of the Earth in orbital travel. Likewise for the Gothic Faustian Western culture. The previously comparatively inert and purposeless migrating population streams, known as Franks, Goths, Angles, Saxons, Danes, Swabians, Alemanni, Lombards, Vandals and Vikings, suddenly had an overcrust added, consisting of Norman Martian Varangians, arriving from Saturn by way of Mars in flying saucers. After 1776, the Khazar Vulcanian Conspiracy, used the Illuminati and Grand Orient Masons. After 1815, it used the financial machinations of the House of Rothschild, and after 1848, the Communist Movement, and after 1895, the Zionist Movement. One more thing needs to be mentioned. Mrs. Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, née Hahn in Germany, 1831 to 1891, founder of Theosophy, was both hypocritical and devilish. A true witch of great evil power, allied with Illuminati, Grand Orient Masons, Russian anarchists, British Israel theorists, proto-Zionists, Arabian assassins, and thuggy from India. Source: The High IQ Bulletin, Volume 4, Number 1, January 1970, published by Philip Campbell Argyle Stewart, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Pat.
What was that word?
Private Chalene asked eagerly.
Snafu,
Private Pearson told him.
You mean to say you never heard it before?
He sat up in his bunk and stared.
I'm a naturalized citizen,
Hagbard said.
I was born in Norway.
He pulled his shirt away from his back again. The Fort Benning summer was much too hot for the Nordic half of his jeans.
Situation normal, all fucked up,
he repeated.
That really sums it up. That really says it. Wait till you've been in this man's army a little longer,
the black man told him vehemently.
Then you'll really appreciate the application of that word, Dads. Oh, man, will you appreciate it. It's not just the army,
Hagbard said thoughtfully.
It's the whole world.
Actually, after they immanentized the eschaton, I found out where my head was leaking that night, and a few other nights too. Into poor George Dawn. The leak almost gave him water on the brain. He kept wondering where all that Joyce and surrealism was coming from. I'm 7 years older than he is, but we're on the same valence because of similar grammar school experiences and revolutionary fathers. That's why Hagbard never really understood either of us fully. He had private tutors until he hit college, and by that stage official education is beginning to make some partial concessions to reality, so the victims have at least a chance of surviving on the outside. I didn't know any of that in Grant Park that night, or how the army helped Hagbard understand in college, because I was working out this new notion of the total valence of the set remaining constant. It would mean that I would have to leave when George came on. Or, say, Marilyn Monroe and Jane Mansfield had to do the pill or autorex shticks before there was room for Raquel Welch's vibes. Illuminati Project, Memo 16, 8/7, J.M. I think I've found the clue as to how Zoroaster, flying saucers, and all that lunatic fringe stuff fits into the Illuminati puzzle. Dig this, boss man. The Nazi Party was founded as the political appendage of the Thule Society, an extremist fringe of the Illuminated Lodge of Berlin. This lodge, in turn, was made up of Rosicrucians, High Freemasons, and its preoccupation was mourning the death of the feudal system. Masons of this time were, like the Federalist Party in post-revolutionary America, working diligently to prevent anarchy and preserve the old values by bringing about Christian socialism. Indeed, the Aaron Burr conspiracy, which Professor Hofstadter notes was allegedly Masonic in origin, was an American prototype of German intrigues of a century later. To their external scientific socialism, these Masons added mystic concepts, which were thought to be Gnostic in origin. One of these was the concept of Gnosticism itself, called Illumination, which held that heavenly beings, directly or indirectly, gave humanity its great ideas and would come back to Earth after mankind had achieved sufficient progress. Illumination was a brand of Pentecostalism, which was persecuted by Orthodox Christianity for centuries and had become lodged in Freemasonry through a complex historical process which is impossible to explain without a major digression. It is sufficient to say that the Nazis, being illuminated, felt themselves to be divinely inspired and therefore felt justified in rewriting the rules of good and evil to suit their own purposes. According to Nazi theory, the heavenly beings, before the present moon was captured, had lived on the highest ground in Peru, Mexico, Gondor, Ethiopia, Himalaya, Atlantis and Mu, forming the Uranian Confederation. This was taken quite seriously, and British intelligence actually combated it with a Tolkien fantasy called The Silmarillion, basis for the famous Hobbit books. Both J. Edgar Hoover and Congressman Otto Passmann are high-ranking Masons, and both, significantly, reflect this philosophy and its Manichaean attitude. The chief danger in Masonic thinking, aside from the divine right of government, is, of course, Manichaeanism, the belief that your opponent is opposing God's will and is therefore an agent of Satan. This is the extreme application, and Mr. Hoover usually reserves it for godless communism, but it is almost always present to some degree. Source: The Nazi Religion, Views on Religious Statism in Germany and America, by J.F.C. Moore, Libertarian American, Volume 3, Number 3, August 1969, Pat. They were using mace now, and I saw one photographer snapping a picture of a cop while the cop was still macing him. Heisenberg rides again. From out of the west come the thundering hooves of the great hearse. Joint phenomenon. Except that I was on acid. If I'd been on weed, then it would really, royally be a joint phenomenon. And I heard later that the photographer got an award for that shot. Right then, he didn't look like he was getting an award. He looked like they had just taken off his skin and touched each raw nerve with a dentist's drill.
Christ,
I said to Hagbard.
Look at that poor bastard. I hope I come out of this with just another tear gassing or two. I don't want any of that mace.
But acid is placid, you know. And a minute later, I was on Joyce's Juices again, and thinking of a drama called Their Mace and My Gripes. I made the first line fruity in honor of Padre Pederastia.
What a botch of a pair to plumb this hour's gripes.
Beers or mala,
Hagbard said.
Our karma is made by our deeds, not by our prayers. You're on the set, so you take the action as it comes.
Ah, oh, cut out that holy man crap-a-roo and stop reading my mind.
I protested.
You don't have to go on impressing me.
But I was off on another tangent, which went something like this. If this set is Mayor Daly's circus, then Mayor Daly is the ringmaster. If the things below are the things above, as Hermes hermetically hinted, then this set is the bigger set. Mr. Microcosm, meet Mr. Macrocosm.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Mac.
Conclusion. Mayor Daly, in a small way, is what Krishna is in a large way. QED. Just then, some SDS kids who'd been tear-gassed across the street came running our way. And Hagbard got busy handing out wet handkerchiefs. They needed them. They were half-blind. Like Joyce splitting his Adam into wise hopes. And I wasn't much help, because I was too busy crying myself.
Hagbard!
I gasped in ecstasy.
Mayor Daly is Krishna.
Worse luck for him,
he said curtly, distributing the handkerchiefs.
He doesn't suspect it.
I thought suddenly...
Hubert the Hump has coughed and hawked and spat on the streets that Lincoln walked.
The water turned to blood. Hagbard was a joking, jolting Jesus. You expected wine, maybe? And I remembered my mother's story about Dillinger at the Biograph. We all sit there, like him, in the Biograph Theatre, dreaming the drama of our lives, then walk outside to the grandmotherly kindness of the lead kisses that wake us back to our slipping beatitude. Except that he found a way to come back. What was it Charlie Mordecai said? First as tragedy, then as farce? Marxism-Lenonism. Ed Sanders of the Fugs the night before, talking about fucking in the streets as if he had read my mind, or had I read his? And Lennon's Why Don't We Do It in the Road was recorded a year in the future. The Marx and our groupies. The bloody handkerchiefs dipped into water or wine, and the mass right went on. The mass went right on. The mace they rode. Capone set it up for the feds, but John was fed up and left the set, so an extra named Frank Sullivan got the bullets, the Autobiograph Theatre, a drama house and a trauma, yes. I maybe should have taken only half a tab instead of the full 500 mics, because at that point the SDH kids, all of them siding with the Rim 1 at the split next year, looked like they had altar boy robes on, and I thought Hagbard was distributing communion wafers, not handkerchiefs. He looked at me suddenly with that hawk-faced Egyptian glare, and I observed that he had observed Hopalong Horace Heisenberg just where I was at. You don't have to be a waterman, I thought, to know which way my mind is blowing. There was a sound from the crowd, like a subway opening all its doors with a suck of air. I saw the police coming, crossing the street to clear the park.
Here we go again,
I said.
All hail Discordia.
Snafu Ubalarlis,
Hagbard grinned, starting to trot beside me. We headed north, figuring that the ones who retreated eastward would get trapped against the wall and creamed.
Democracy in action,
I said, panting along.
There thou mightest behold the very image of authority,
he quoted, shifting his water bucket to keep it in balance. I caught the Shakespeare reference and looked back. My mind had already. Each policeman indeed looked like Shakespeare's dog. I remembered the frantic semantics at the LBJ anti-birthday party, when Burroughs insisted Chicago cops were more like dogs than pigs, in contradiction to the SDS rhetoric. Terry Southern, taking his usual maniacal middle course, claimed they were more akin to the purple-assed mandrill, most surly of the baboon family. But most of them hadn't discovered writing yet.
Authority?
I asked, realizing I'd lost something along the way. We were slowing to a walk. The action was behind us.
A is not A,
Hagbard explained with that tiresome patience of his.
Once you accept A is A, you're hooked. Literally hooked. Addicted to the system.
I caught the references to Aristotle, the old man of the tribe with his unfortunate epistemological paresis, and also to that feisty little lady I always imagine is really the lost Anastasia. But I still didn't grok.
What do you mean?
I asked, grabbing a wet handkerchief as some of the tear gas started to drift to our end of the park.
Chairman Mao didn't say half of it,
Hagbard replied, holding a handkerchief to his own face. His words came through muffled.
It isn't only political power that grows out of the barrel of a gun. So does a whole definition of reality. A set, and the action that has to happen on that particular set, and on none other.
Don't be so bloody patronizing,
I objected, looking around a corner in time and realizing This was the night I would be maced.
That's just Marx. The ideology of the ruling class becomes the ideology of the whole society.
Not the ideology, the reality.
He lowered his handkerchief.
This was a public park until they changed the definition. Now the guns have changed the reality. It isn't a public park. There's more than one kind of magic.
Just like the Enclosure Acts,
I said hollowly.
One day the land belonged to the people, the next day it belonged to the landlords.
And like the Narcotics Acts,
he added,
100,000 harmless junkies became criminals overnight by Act of Congress in 1927. 10 years later, in 1937, all the potheads in the country became criminals overnight by Act of Congress. And they really were criminals. When the papers were signed, the guns prove it. Walk away from those guns, waving a joint, and refuse to halt when they tell you. Their imagination will become your reality in a second.
And I had my answer to Dad, finally. Just as a cop jumped out of the darkness screaming something about freaking motherfucking fag commies and maced me, as was certain to happen. I knew it as I crumbled in pain on that set. Illuminati Project, Memo 16-8-7. J.M., here's some more info on how Blavatsky, Theosophy, and the motto under the Great Pyramid on the U.S. seal fit into the Illuminati picture, or don't fit into the picture. It's getting more confusing the further I dig into it. This is an article defending Madame Blavatsky after Truman Capote had repeated the John Birch Society charge that Sirhan Sirhan was inspired to murder Robert Kennedy by reading Blavatsky's works. Sirhan Blavatsky Capote by Ted Zatlin, Los Angeles Free Press, July 26, 1968. Birch's that attack Madame Blavatsky, though smaller in number and as crazy as ever, find a new home in an atmosphere of suspicion and violence. Truman Capote takes them seriously. Does Mr. Capote know that the Illuminati, according to the Sacred Birch Doctrine, began in the Garden of Eden, when Eve made it with a snake and gave birth to Cain? That all the descendants of Snake Man Cain belong to a super-secret group known as the Illuminati, dedicated to absolutely nothing but the meanest, low-down evil imagined in the satanic mind of man. Anti-Illuminati John Steinbacher writes in his unpublished book Novus Ordo Seclorum, The New Order of the Ages, "Today in America, many otherwise talented people are flirting with disaster by associating with those same evil forces. Madame Blavatsky's doctrine was strikingly similar to that of Weishaupt." The author also gives his version of the Birch's version of what the Illuminati are actually trying to accomplish. Their evil goal is to transcend materiality and to bring about one world denying the sovereignty of nations and the sanctity of private property. I don't think I can believe or even understand this, but at least it explains how both the Nazis and the communists can be pawns of the Illuminati. Or does it? Pat.